Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
M-A-L.
O'Connor and Company.
A very good Thursday morning to you at 7:07 here on O'Connor and Company. Coming up at 7:35, Julio Rosas is down there in Uvalde, Texas for town hall. He was reporting on the border. Now he's reporting on the aftermath of this shooting. And he was there when Beto O'Rourke made an ass of himself. We will talk to Julio about that. At 8:05, Dana Kennedy is covering the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Kate Moss on the stand yesterday. We'll get the latest there. And then at 8:35, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who I'm sure is not following the Johnny Depp, Amber Heard, and Kate Moss trial. But nonetheless, we've got plenty to talk to Ollie North about. And look who's here. It's Mary Catherine Hamm.
I'm here this morning.
You're having fun, I hope.
I am.
Good, because I know that this story hits close to home for you with a seven-month-old baby waiting for you to come home. We still have a horrific baby formula shortage. In fact, some of the pictures I've seen recently of the shelves are even worse than they were a week ago when this story actually reached its pinnacle.
Yes.
In many respects.
Well, it was a long time building up to getting attention to it.
I was going to say, thanks to the tireless efforts of our mutual friend Bethany Mandel, who was on the air with us last week.
Yes.
And she was one of the first people I saw reporting on this months ago, because she also had
hey, this is a big deal.
Joining us right now is Peter Pitts, former FDA Associate Commissioner. He's currently now the president and co-founder of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest, which is something we need to have in our favor considering the aftermath of the pandemic and now this crisis. Peter Pitts, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's first focus on Abbott. This Mr. Calamari, who is the vice president of some division that oversees the plant in question here in Michigan, he said under oath that he had no idea of the problems going on at this plant. Aren't there protocols in place and quality control measures in place that require an executive to know about things like this?
He was evasive and unresponsive, and I'm surprised that he still has his job, quite frankly. You know, he's only had that job for 11 months, which actually didn't come up during the hearing, but ignorance is no excuse. If he's the guy at the top, the shortage is Abbott's fault. The plant was in egregious shape, according to Commissioner Califf. It had to be closed. And all this guy could say was that the people at the plant are making baby formula as though they were giving to their own kids. Well, I hope not.
Right. Ooh, yes. That's not a great sign. Let me ask you this. When the FDA, because you have experience with this, when the FDA flags something like this, obviously there was a lag time before the FDA got involved, and now there's a lag time on sort of getting them approved to reopen. Is there a process for accelerating that kind of thing when you get into this sort of situation?
Well, what the FDA is doing is accelerating it, but they can't rush. When you accelerate, you put all the resources you have on the issue. When you rush, you make mistakes. So that's what's going on. And even though it's taking a long time, it isn't taking longer than it should. This is a huge facility. The problems were many. You know, safety and quality were at issue. There were no processes in place, as we talked about earlier. That being said, you know, the FDA fell down on informing the public about what was going on. They didn't tell pediatricians. You know, they should have all done all of those things. I think if we learned nothing else from COVID-19 is that when people are told the truth, they may not like it, but at least they respect it and they can address it.
But Mr. Pitts, I understand, you know, not wanting to rush face first into something, and you want to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, but I mean, when you see that literally mothers and fathers are desperate to get formula because they're concerned they won't be able to feed their children, isn't there a way to throw all as many resources as possible at something like this to make it go faster?
Well, it is going faster. That's the hard part to explain. This is a complicated process. You know, the FDA could have done a lot more earlier. You know, if people had known what was happening, they could have planned. If retail outlets knew what was happening, they could have put procedures in place to stop hoarding and panic buying. You know, we could have gotten through a rocky period a little bit smoother. But as the result was, there was no planning on anybody's part. There was dishonesty on the part of Abbott, which is part of the problem why it took so long. The FDA had to uncover problems that were being hidden from it.
Yeah.
And I think the honest truth is we still got another month to go.
Well, we're also learning that a whistleblower report that was delivered to the FDA sat in the mailroom for upwards to 4 months because of COVID protocols that had been put in place. Is there any explanation for that?
Well, unfortunately, it's true, and it's unacceptable. And Dr. Caleb said that those protocols have to change. At least he acknowledged that the FDA made a lot of mistakes. I think his words were, it wasn't elevated to the right people, which is fancy language for they messed up. He owned up to the mistake, but the mistake was made and has severe consequences.
What do you think about the availability of these different kinds of formula from Europe that many people get on sort of a gray market anyway? For many years, that's been happening. It's sort of what the government's doing right now is a bit of an emergency authorization for European formula. What do you think about that issue and how they're handling it?
I think it could have been done in February. Again, when we would have had those products on the shelves right now to help mitigate the shortages a little bit. I guess what the president didn't say and what he should have said was, we're bringing in formula for those babies most at risk, and we're going to get it to them as quickly as possible. That's the right thing to do. I think there's a degree of political theater on the Defense Production Act, which will accomplish nothing.
Yeah.
Because there are no shortages of elements of baby formula, corn syrup and rice starch and protein from cow's milk, commodities. No shortages now, no shortages ever. I think the question becomes, why didn't the president know sooner? Certainly Secretary Becerra knew, chose not to elevate it to the White House. Another mistake.
So the executives at Abbott didn't know sooner, the hierarchy at the FDA didn't know sooner, and of course then once it reached ahead, the president didn't know any sooner, or people within the administration that could do something about it. It's clear to say it's failure all around. We're speaking with Peter Pitts, former FDA Associate Commissioner. Is there a problem also here with regard to second and third stage thinking and planning? The FDA, rightly it appears, shut this plant down because of egregious violations. But at some point, someone must have said, okay, if you shut this plant down, we're going to have a problem because so much of the supply comes from here. It's at that moment where the FDA should then start saying, okay, how are we going to make up for this since we are the ones shutting down this plant? Does that conversation even happen?
Well, this is a shot across the bow for the FDA. Obviously, baby formula is a consolidated business. It's a high volume, low margin business, which means you have few large manufacturers. But there are other products within the FDA portfolio of regulation, both food and medical products, that are in a similar situation, like insulin, for example, or IV tubing, or sterile injectables for hospitals. The FDA needs to use this as a wake-up call to recognize it's got to do an audit of products that are in similar situations where if one plant goes down, there are national shortages that threaten healthcare, and come up with plans. You can't deal with these things on ad hoc basis.
Do you think that some of the relaxed attitudes toward foreign imports on this will remain to be one of the solutions to those future issues?
Well, I think that we have to look at solutions here. It's not just the relaxed, certainly there shouldn't be relaxed quality and safety standards ever, but there's a 17.5% tariff on foreign baby formula. Maybe
right.
That's the wrong answer. Maybe protectionism is not the right way to go here. And then, of course, there's the whole question of making sure that WIC moms get the products they need and have choices on the products they can buy.
Well, but we also understand one of the roadblocks to some more robust import of European formula options is because of a labeling concern, that it's labeled differently there versus here. It seems like the FDA focuses on things like that rather than, some more substantial issues with regard to what the consumer needs.
Well, labeling is pretty substantial. You have to tell parents if there are differences in the products they're using, if it needs more or less water. Information is power, and moms and dads and new parents need it. They're on the razor's edge anyway. They need as much help as they can get. And then, of course, the FDA also has to make sure they can review all the appropriate science to make sure that the products are of highest quality.
Peter Pitts, we got to leave it there, but I appreciate you joining us.
On the next Vince Colanese Show, the biggest threat to the left, the truth. It tells you a lot. Join us 3 to 6 right here on WMAL.
Mary Catherine Hamm is with us this morning. I'm going to reveal things. You just said your Facebook memories just gave you an alert from 11 years ago.
From 11 years ago on this day, May 26, 2011, Mary Catherine is co-hosting on WMAL this morning from 5 to 9 a.m. So there you go.
There you go.
We're stuck in a time
11
warp.
11 years later,
I'm just
really
in a loop.
Although that must have been with Brian. Brian and Brian,
yes,
probably.
Brian Neiman.
Brian Neiman and Brian
Wilson.
And here I am. At least I bring you a nicer studio. It is much prettier environment.
It is prettier in here.
Well, as we let's look a little further in our memories, back to our senior year of high school. This is the week here. You know, you've already done your finals.
Right.
You're just waiting for graduation. You already have your, if you're going to college, you're already accepted. If you're going to the military, you're already lined up for that. This is it. Senioritis. Exactly. I spent my entire last quarter of my senior year at Sergeant Pepperoni's Pizza Parlor.
Love it.
In Costa Mesa, California. And then came the senior pranks. Did you have any senior pranks in your high school that you recall?
Yes. In fact, I almost got picked up by the police.
really?
Yes.
Was there a law infraction?
I was not doing anything illegal.
Necessarily.
Allegedly. No, but I was in proximity to people who were doing something illegal. Ah. There was some vandalism going on, and I was not a part of that. My crew was not a part of that, but we got asked in no uncertain terms to leave the grounds.
Okay. So you could have been an accessory. So I was involved in a vandal. It was vandalizing, but it was minor vandalism. It was soap in the fountain.
Oh, it's not too bad.
And it was brilliant.
Some other kids were spray painting stuff. We were just goofing around, hanging bras on the front fence. But but the cop who responded, this was hilarious. My father worked at the local newspaper, and the cop who responded was a former reporter or a staffer at the newspaper, and she recognized me, and
I'm
trying to hide in the background. She's like, "Is that Mary Catherine Hamm over there?"
Nope. Who's that? Who's that?
You can never escape in your hometown.
Well, I just got a story yesterday flying through of what may be the greatest senior prank I've ever seen in my life. Because apparently, I love the West. I loved being a Californian for as long as I did. There is something really wonderful about the Western states. And in Montana, there is a law on the books right now that if a student rides their horse to school, the principal is legally obligated to take care of that horse.
The rules are the rules, Larry.
That's right. We don't make the rules. Well, this has got to be a senior prank because at a high school in Montana, a dozen students Monday, showed up on horseback. And the principal comes out, and they're like standing there. They got their cowboy hats, their jeans and everything. And they said, "All right, sir.
Time for you to take care of the horses.
Take care. Here you go. I want her fed, and I want her bathed and brushed and ready at the end of the school day."
It's a beautiful moment.
It is. You know, it's considering all of the crap that we have to see out of our public school system and our high school kids, that's kind of fun.
In our
sorry, I can't get enough
no, it's
of that.
Fine. Yeah. I'm frequently interrupted by horses. And their rear ends.
It's a whole other story.
At our school, it was a tradition at some point during the last bit of school for seniors to ride to school. This is similarly redneck, but not quite as Western.
Mm-hmm.
To ride their riding lawnmowers to school.
That's great.
And they were staged in the neighborhood right next to the school, and then they would just putter over and park them all in the senior parking lot.
They didn't like do a couple of laps on the football field.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that.
Carving their names and initials and other designs that probably shouldn't be carved.
It was a very, very suburban redneck look.
Well, we salute the graduating students of Conrad, Montana, Conrad Public Schools, with this dozen horseback riding children. Well done. They're going to be great. I hope they go into the Mounted Police Corps. Actually,
nice.
It's just you can get paid to ride your horse.
I mean,
and
pretty
mess
cool.
Mess with hippies. It's 7:21.
Making sense of your world.
Talk radio is where I get all of my information.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Crazy train kept rolling there in Fairfax as the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial had another star-studded day, this time with Kate Moss. Actually, Johnny Depp went on the stand as well,
yes,
which was not expected. But here is his ex, Kate Moss, denying a rumor that's oft-repeated about their relationship.
We were leaving the room, and Johnny left the room before I did, and there had been a rainstorm. And as I left the room, I slid down the stairs, and I hurt my back.
How did you...
And
I apologize, Ms. Moss. Please continue.
And I screamed because I was in... because I didn't know what had happened to me, and I was in pain. And he came running back to help me and carried me to my room and got me medical attention.
So, in other words, he never threw her down the stairs. He actually came and helped her.
This is me forgetting that Kate Moss was British until right now.
Listen, we are going to get more on the trial yesterday with our guest Dana Kennedy coming up at 8:05. Right now it's 7:30.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
Good Thursday morning to you here on O'Connor and Company. Coming up at 8:05, Dana Kennedy will continue our coverage of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Everyone keeps calling it the Johnny Depp trial, but it's, you know, there's two parties at play here. Mary For Catherine sure. Hamm. Although I guess he is the one who instigated the lawsuit, so maybe it is his trial. Anyway, we'll get into it with the New York Post reporter Dana Kennedy at 8:05. And then at 8:35, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North will join us. Mary Catherine Hamm here all morning long. And Mary Catherine, I know you start. We mentioned earlier you started your career with Town Hall.
I did.
I'm at Town Hall now. Great lineup there with your bestie pal Guy Benson.
Yes.
The amazing
important work and Katie Pavlich.
Katie
as well.
Pavlich and Spencer. What's Spencer's name again? Spencer. I like to give him crap. Matt Vespa and the whole team over there. I'm proud to be a part of it. And this young man has done such incredible reporting over the last 2 years. And he joins us now because, once again, he finds himself in the middle of a major national story. He is Julio Rosas, senior writer at Town Hall. His book, by the way, you should get it, is called Fiery But Mostly Peaceful, The 2020 Riots and the Gaslighting of America. He had a front row seat to those events. And, Julio, you're now down at the center of the storm in Uvalde, Texas. You were there just covering the border, though, right?
Yes. Originally came down to Eagle Pass, which is about an hour away from Uvalde. And to cover what was going to happen if Title 42 was going to be removed or going to stay, and be, you know, we were hearing the news about it, and that's why we decided to head over.
So I want to get to what you witnessed yesterday with this Beto O'Rourke spectacle at the press conference. But what do you know about the involvement of these Border Patrol agents? I know you've got a lot of sources within their ranks and the hero that ended up stopping this bloodbath.
Well, it's pretty interesting, right? Because, I mean, Uvalde, like I said, it's only an hour away from the border, so it is a, but you know, by definition, a border town essentially. And the agent who actually took down the shooter was part of the agency's BORTEC unit, which is kind of like their special forces SWAT type of resource that they have for situations that require, you know, a lot more training and a lot more basically guts. They get a lot of the tough assignments in that for not for school shootings per se, but just for when they, you know, come up against a very, very challenging situation.
Yeah.
Right. And what are you hearing about these early reports about perhaps why the border agent had to go into the school? There's some reporting from AP that perhaps the local police were outside and he went in perhaps to take care of the fact that there was no one inside.
Yeah. So unfortunately, it does kind of seem like there's a little bit of a Columbine situation in terms of the police response, because the shooter was in the school for about an hour, which is very, very, a very, very long time. And, you know, standard protocol, you know, especially after Columbine, is as soon as, you know, law enforcement is on the scene, law enforcement goes in to take out the threat, not sit around and contain waiting for SWAT, which is what happened in Columbine. And that's part of the reason why the death toll over there was so high. You know, Uvalde is a very small town, you know, 15,000 people, give or take. And so, you know, this is not by any means, a city that deals with a lot of violent crime,
right,
per se, compared to, you know, other cities. I was kind of wondering why the death toll was so high, considering that the police response was pretty good in terms of them arriving on
right,
the scene,
initially, quick, right?
But they didn't go in. It appears.
But it looks like they didn't go in soon enough, and that's you know, kind of the really sad thing that happened.
Yesterday, Julio Rosas from Town Hall, who's our guest now, he was attending a press conference of Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, Mayor Don McLaughlin of Uvalde, and, an embarrassing political spectacle happened. Here, listen.
Excuse me. Sit down.
You're out of line and an embarrassment.
Hey. Sit down and don't play this stuff.
Is right now, and you are doing nothing.
No, you need to get your ass out of here. This isn't the place to talk this over.
This is totally predictable. When you,
sir, you're out of line. Sir, you're out of line. Sir, you're out of line. Please leave this auditorium. I can't believe you're a sick son of a bitch that would come to a deal like this to make a political issue.
I think that's Mayor Don McLaughlin there speaking for all of us, all decent Americans. That's Beto O'Rourke crashing the press conference for a political stunt. Julio, what was the scene like when that happened?
I mean, it was pretty, I wasn't expecting that, obviously. Yeah. Because people who are defending Beto O'Rourke is saying that, well, of course, you know, when is the time to talk about this issue with, you know, the political ramifications of what happened? And the thing is that this wasn't a political event per se. I mean, yes, there's politicians involved, but that's because they're the elected officials,
officials
of the state,
right.
Doing their job
and the city, and they were providing an update as to what was happening. And so this wasn't a political rally. This was an official event trying to give an update about this tragic situation. And then we have a failed candidate trying to make it about himself and trying to grandstand about this case. And so I would say it's surprising, but knowing Beto O'Rourke, his previous kind of stunts is also not. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed Abbott's response, not in the moment, but a later response mentioned, let's not make this about ourselves about four times in a way that one would speak to one's children about. let's take that lesson to heart. It really was such an inappropriate venue. And I know the left always says, but this is such an urgent problem. We must yell at people about it in every venue. But unfortunately, if that's always the answer, then you're never actually dealing with it.
Yeah. Just drawing attention to oneself. Hey, Julio, did you get to talk to any of the members of the community and even parents and others who were there that witnessed this? How did this go over there in town?
So I actually spoke to Mayor McLaughlin after the vigil last night, just asking, you know, hey, you know, now that you have time to cool off, because that was, you know, he was pretty heated in the moment for obvious reasons. He just said, I have no respect for Beto. You know, if people want to have the political conversation, they can have it, just not at that specific time and place. And he said, apparently he's been getting emails and texts from people who are angry at him for how he reacted to O'Rourke's stunt. And he said, to hell with you, too.
He stands by calling Beto O'Rourke a six SOB.
Yeah, he very much does, and who can blame him?
Yeah, amen. Julio Rosas, great job, as always, my friend. Great hearing from you.
Get his book.
Yes, buy his book. Fiery, but mostly peaceful. Thanks, Julio. Were you a Barbie doll person, Mary Catherine Hale?
I was not. In fact, I am knocked for my Barbie playing skills on a regular basis by my children.
Is that right? Oh, so now they're into Barbies.
Yeah, they say I'm terrible at it.
Is there a wrong way to play Barbie?
Oh, there is. I do not embody the role. I'm not. My heart isn't in it. And I have no experience with it. I grew up with two brothers. I played Transformers.
Okay.
And not that gender is a real thing.
Yeah.
But my husband, on the other hand, very good at it.
Not that gender is a real thing. Well,
when he takes on a role, he takes on a role.
Well, you know what? I think maybe your husband would be very happy with this news item then, because Mattel has now put out the very first ever trans Barbie.
Well,
so now your husband will be like,
that's quite a role for him.
It's based on Laverne Cox. That's the actor who goes by the name Laverne Cox. fill in the blank for your own joke. You know, I'm not going to go there. It's too easy. Low-hanging fruit, as they say.
Oh, he kind of went there, but in a better way. I liked it.
Laverne says, I can't wait for fans to find my doll on shelves. Mattel will now be marketing this first-ever transgender Barbie to three square blocks in the downtown Manhattan Greenwich Village area and in certain neighborhoods in San Francisco. No, that's not true. It's going to be everywhere. You will not be able to. In fact, it'll be the only doll on the shelves for Mattel, probably.
Well, and it's actually hate if you don't buy it.
That's right. That's right.
That's the problem.
You are actually a hater
it's
if
a
you
hate,
don't get
it's
this.
It's a hate detector.
Over 250, by the way, Laverne went on to describe how this is a bit of hope and possibility for trans people in a year where over 250 pieces of anti-trans legislation have been introduced in state legislatures all over the country. That's the feel-good part of this story, by the way. I don't know if this is going to help their products. Who buys a trans? By the way, if Laverne, the whole point of Laverne Cox's, you know, MO is that Laverne Cox is able to play women, take roles right, away right. from women in Hollywood because Laverne Cox is so convincing as a woman. So when you get the Laverne Cox trans Barbie doll,
it's just a Barbie.
Yes. Yeah. Is it the whole point that it's just a Barbie?
And in fact, it's more realistically a Barbie because Laverne Cox is an exaggerated form of femininity,
yes.
right? Like it's a play acting.
Thank you. I've been trying to beat this drum forever. It's how is this different than blackface when a man dresses up as a woman and pretends to be a woman but exaggerates certain feminine characteristics?
So one of the things that gets me about this whole debate is that I like gender fluidity, but the trans argument ends up retrograde sort of putting us into the same boxes again. Like,
yeah.
if you feel like you like boy toys, which I, as
right,
I
just
noted,
said,
I did.
You played Transformers, you played sports.
Then
it's
you
like,
are
sudden,
a boy. It's
yes.
like, no, I'm just a girl who likes different things. Yeah. And that is good. That's fine.
Thank you for explaining your love of gender fluidity. We were all sort of holding our breath there for a moment. We also have an update on this.
That's true gender fluidity.
Yeah, that is real gender fluidity. And not putting people into boxes. And you can still be a woman and still, you know, anyway. State Farm. Remember, State Farm got into some trouble because they were pushing this donation program of books aimed at 5-year-olds to explore their gender identity and gay issues. State Farm executive vice president now has put out a voice message to all agents nationwide. Jennifer Van Laar at Red State reported on this yesterday. He personally said his voice sounded distressed in the voicemail, which I couldn't imagine. And he said, we made a mistake with our involvement in this program. We're sorry. The local agents must have just been absolutely out of their heads about this.
Well, that's the thing, right? These are folks who've been building relationships with folks in Peoria and in Louisville for their entire careers. And then the corporate folks come along. They're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pair with an organization that gives gender ideology and trans-themed storybooks to elementary school kids.
Yeah.
Now, listen, a lot of folks in Peoria or Louisville might be fine and tolerant of trans ideology or gender ideology for adults.
Sure.
But once you go to kids, they're going to have some issues.
Of course. And it seems like this decision was made at a very low management level with regard to their charitable foundation, and it never cleared the executive board. At least that's what they're saying.
Some woke 28-year-old was like, this is an awesome idea.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I do think there's a new – we sort of turned a page here where corporations are learning that wading into this, especially in bad economic times when your margins are not great, that you are going to turn people off, and you might actually hear from the right in the same painful way you have heard from the left for many, many, many years.
Really? You think we've turned a corner? You think the corporations going to start being responsible? State Farm did. I suppose that's true.
State Farm backtracked very quickly, and post-leak of the Dobbs decision, you did not see corporations
true.
Just printing out statements left and right.
Well.
Or mostly left.
We still you're right. We still have a little work to do, though, because the Daily Mail is reporting on a brand new cereal that's being marketed. It's called Period Crunch. And the little nuggets of corn meal that you get in your cereal bowl are in the shape of a uterus.
Sure, man. Sure.
It aims to normalize conversations about periods at the breakfast table. Mary Catherine?
Delicious fallopios in the morning.
That would have actually been a better marketing plan.
No, the name is not okay with me.
Period.
And I am a perfectly liberated woman who is comfortable talking about that. And I have three daughters and I will have to talk about it a lot. But
yes.
No, do I need to have it in cereal form? I don't think I do.
I'm looking at it here. It's got the ovaries. It's got the tubes. It's got the whole situation.
I don't feel that empowered.
They're red and they're raspberry flavored.
Also, men have uteruses. What are we?
I hadn't.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.